technical support. I am more concerned, however, that what started as something for limited use, negative ads, which have their place, has become essentially the entirety of mass political communications. 90% of the ads in presidential campaigns are negative, and politics has become more about what campaigns are against than what they stand for. Social media has also added to the political distortions. And while I don't think the Russian Facebook ads had any impact on the election because of their small size, they do show how divisive messages work on the internet and how they can easily be exploited to sow discontent. You want clicks? You want money? Then go destroy someone. As the rise of the couch potato voter shows, too many people have been left outside the political system and too much effort is spent on attracting fringe voters rather than bringing people together by appealing across the aisle. Many elements of our electoral infrastructure have evolved in haphazard ways due to the rise of the power of political parties and the people who controlled those entities. We need to make voter registration universal, starting with a voter registration card issued to all citizens at birth or on the day of naturalization. The current system is a complete mess. To avoid fraud and manage people moving residences, we need a central identification system and voter database, letting people send in documentation about which state they reside in based on where they pay taxes, much as they do now to get a passport. It no longer makes sense to avoid national systems of identification when ID is so critical to voting, travel, and even entering an office building. This is the best and simplest solution. We need to keep voting secret in nature, but allow people to vote in other convenient ways and at convenient times. Internet voting could be a disaster because people can look over your shoulder and the security of it is questionable. But I think ATMs could be turned into secure voting terminals based on personalized voting cards. Voting should move from Tuesdays to being done over entire weekends. I would discourage advance voting, which has been the trend, because it means not everyone hears the entire campaign, and it encourages people to shut down, listening only to their own views, when the last weeks of a campaign are typically the most informative. End all caucuses and replace the nomination systems with uniform primary systems across the nation, starting with different states chosen by lottery so that no state has a built-in advantage. Caucuses are fundamentally low-turnout, undemocratic institutions that have no place in a modern democracy. The brouhaha over Team Clinton's control of the DNC in 2015 may hasten demands for needed reforms here that would get rid of the superdelegates in exchange for getting rid of the caucuses, scoring one for the left, one for the center, and two for the people of the country. Electioneering ads, whether they are online or on TV, should be filed with a central clearinghouse where they can be inspected and go through a limited validation process, as all TV spots traditionally did before they could run on broadcast. The fairness doctrine may have outlived its usefulness, but completely eliminating it and having no similar concept anywhere in the public, through the airwaves or the internet, has not worked out any better. In fact, a strong case can be made that eliminating this policy really ushered in the balkanization of news and the ability to go for niche viewers and clicks based on exploiting people's political viewpoints. We can't go backward, but we still do have to solve the problem that has been created, and perhaps bringing back some limited public interest rules would be a start. Do more to encourage marriage and having children. Immigration should be a supplement to family life in America, not a substitute for having and rearing kids in one of the greatest child-friendly environments ever created. As we become more prosperous and more educated, more and more people are skipping marriage, see never married, and starting open marriages. Those are great choices for the people who make them consciously and intentionally. But the continuation of every worthwhile country and culture does depend upon welcoming families and children and allowing people to take root over generations. My parents were from immigrant families, and we have grown in America from a small band to a moderate-sized clan. I think 50 years ago, people thought that America would be so crowded now that both China and America might have to have a one-child policy. Instead, China has ended the policy, and we need to do more to encourage people of all types to enjoy having families. Whatever we have done, it has not been enough against the pull of modern life toward their careers, the allure of greater success, and the conveniences of less family life. We will need not only to expand just tax deductions, but to encourage families culturally. We need to expand policies like family and medical leave and maternity-paternity care to European standards, because no matter the immediate cost, the long-term benefits of bending this curve, which now shows an ever-aging nation, are enormous. Bring the new economy to every region. Although we started the process in the 1990s, somehow we fell off the task of bringing the new economy to every region of the country, especially the Midwest. This failure to set up incentives for spreading the new jobs and the income that came with them has, in large measure, intensified the division between the tech finance classes and the old economy voters. We need to set up national incentives, using something like the corporate tax as an incentive for companies to spread new economy jobs. Every state should be ranked by the percentage of employment that can be tied to the new or digital economy, and an incentive system should be created to give tax breaks to companies moving jobs to those locations. This is similar to what New York is doing in parts of the city. Significant breaks are being given for bringing jobs to Lower Manhattan after 9/11. And there are no incentives for bringing new jobs to Midtown. This same approach should be taken nationally with high-tech and low-tech jobs created by the digital companies. It may be slightly suboptimal economically, but we need to create a greater sense of unified purpose across the country. And this is perhaps the largest fault line separating people, their culture, and their politics. Tech is going to continue to be the center of economic growth in the next decade, and we need to make every state a tech-oriented one if we are to once again be the United States of America. This same policy should be implemented in any other country facing these same problems, certainly the UK, for instance. It is definitely not too late to make these changes. Technology is at the center of the growth of our prosperity and our future. Many elements of it are developing in incredibly positive ways. But it is this combination of technology, globalization, demographics, and people's personal attitudes based on how they fared in the last decade that has created a series of powerful disruptions. On the one hand, it has created the new Hazels, whereby people are having more of their needs met than ever before. It has also created angry pockets of people who felt left behind or underserved, whether they be old economy voters or members of a newly energized immigrant community. The pull of these roughly equal but powerful forces, after so many years in which the coastal elites governed with their support, has created upheaval in the political world. At the same time, a new modern lifestyle is being created. Both youth and old age have been elongated. The phases of life in which people are young, without major commitments, is much longer now, as is life post-retirement. Both shifts have driven significant cultural changes, and when you combine these with the rapid growth of technology, there's enormous potential for instability. All of this means that we need to see some significant thought given to changes in the development of technology, the rules around business and marketing, reforms of our political system, and the deployment of government resources and policy beyond the typical areas of taxes, deficits, and entitlements. So far, we have survived the atom bomb and its power to destroy the world. The somewhat darker question is whether we have the foresight and resolve to survive the power of the internet age to destroy us all. Sitting with President Clinton at the ceremonies ushering in the new millennium, I would have laughed at that proposition. Today, nearly two decades later, I would rather be an alarmist about how the next set of microtrends could be our last. And yet, I don't think it is too late for us to wake up and get back on a path to taming the forces and counterforces unleashed by microtrends squared.
Microtrends Squared, the new small forces driving the big disruptions today, was written by Mark Penn with Meredith Feynman. and read by Jonathan Todd Ross, with a foreword read by Mark Penn. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Microtrends Squared, the new small forces driving the big disruptions today, is available in print from Simon & Schuster.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.